and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. We're ending the week with a roundup of the latest film releases, and joining me here in the studio to talk zombies, westerns, and family drama, wow, what a combo, is the critic Anna Smith. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Good to be here.
Now, let's begin today with Little Men. This is the new film by the director Ira Sachs, who many will know from his 2014 film Love is Strange. Set in New York, the film is based around a friendship formed by two boys as their parents battle over a dress shop lease. Anna, this film has been praised for its intricate reflections on modern life, but how did you find it?
I enjoyed it very much. It's a subtle film, even more subtle than Love is Strange. Ira Sachs is very good at kind of telling a story without you really knowing exactly where it's going or why you're watching it. But the kids in question are terrific, and it's very much about the relationship of these two boys as they befriend each other, and then their parents are kind of squabbling, but terribly politely in that very middle-class way, over sort of property. Greg Kinnear and Jennifer Early play them, the parents in question, and they're really, really strong. And I thought it was one of those films that doesn't particularly go anywhere, but I enjoyed watching it sort of play out.
I do love a polite squabble. Let's have a polite squabble of our own while we hear a clip.
Our parents are involved in a business matter. It's getting ugly, so they're taking it out of us.
Tony, you need to go home now.
One of the hardest things to realize when you're a child is that your parents are people too. You understand that? They care about things. They make mistakes. They try to do what they think is the right thing to do. Does any of what I'm saying make any sense to you? Say something, Jake! Say something!
Gee, thanks, Dad. That's a very encouraging story.
Anna, I'm actually quite a fan of this style of film, this quite talk-heavy relationship-style drama, usually set in New York around the middle class, as you mentioned. And I noticed that it's actually, the screenplay was co-written by Ira Sachs. Did you get a feeling that he had quite control over the end result of this film? Has he injected quite a bit of his own trademark personality into it?
Always. He's a very personal filmmaker. He always makes films about his own life. He's a Jewish New Yorker who is gay, and a lot of his films sort of follow that kind of thread, and one of the children in this is implied to be gay. So there's a feeling that possibly it is slightly autobiographical, even though it's very much of its time now. It's very much about the gentrification of New York and kids being sort of grown up in a neighbourhood which is frequently changing and where their parents can't necessarily continue to afford to live.
How does it compare to the past films that he's put forward?
Well, I was a huge fan of Love is Strange, which with Alfred Molina and John Lithgow playing an older gay couple struggling with sort of similar problems in some ways. I don't think it's as strong as that. It's not as funny. It is funny, but it just didn't quite grab me the way that one did. And it certainly isn't as emotionally impactful, but it's along the same lines. If you like that film, I think you'll quite like this one.
Now, I'm thinking of some other films in this sort of similar vein, and I mean, the similarities can be somewhat cosmetic. I'm thinking of films by Noah Baumbach, maybe some of the early stuff from Woody Allen as well. Is it from that style of family, that sort of quite, I mean, the films revolve around relationships, but it never gets too dark, too heavy. It's really quite something that leaves you feeling quite fulfilled by the end.
Yeah, I think Noah Baumbach is a good kind of comparison, really. It's everything is bubbling under the surface. You're never really worried that it's going to turn into anything horribly dramatic or distressing, but there are sort of unseen threats.
Well, that is Little Men. It's out now in the United States, the United Kingdom, and France as well. Well, if poignant drama is not your thing and you want your film to pack a little more of an on-screen punch, then perhaps our next film is for you. The Girl with All the Gifts might sound like the title of a sweet, festive movie, but it's actually something rather different. Let's take a listen.
Once upon a time, there was a woman. The most beautiful and amazing woman in all the world.
No! You just touched her. Watch.
No, please, don't do that. They're only children. Stop it!
One day, she was attacked by a monster. But then a girl came running up and killed it. And the woman said, "You are my special girl, and I'll never let you go."
Oh, Anna, not more zombies, really.
Do you know what? I thought the same thing. I am not a fan of the zombie movie as a rule, apart from maybe Shaun of the Dead and 28 Days Later. Anything else, I'm like, not interested. The good news is this is much more in common with 28 Days Later than it has any other recent zombie movies because it's intelligent. It's got something to say. Yes, I'm not very interested in seeing zombies eating people and the sort of gory action side of things, but this takes a quite introspective, kind of analytical look at what it means to be human and what humanity does in a crisis. It's very post-apocalyptic. It's set in a future where these young children are kept in wheelchairs and gradually, as is revealed in the trailer, it turns out that they are what they call hungries and are being sort of kept in prisoners effectively by the humans, possibly to experiment on them. Glenn Close plays a rather sinister scientist. But events take their course and one of these sort of hungry girls ends up sort of helping, or is she, some of the humans who go on the run in a crisis. So it's a real kind of disaster movie in a way, but with a brain.
You piqued my interest there with Glenn Close. She's always a pleasure to watch on the screen. Does this give its own spin on the sort of the concept of what a zombie is, though? Because I think part of my problem with zombies often today is that they're not really zombies anymore. They're a little bit too quick. They're a little bit too able-bodied, whereas the classic zombie was quite disposable, quite ridiculous, quite absurd. They were scary, but they were slow, and you know, you'd give them one punch and the arm would fall off or something. You know, they were quite a bit of fun. Today, you know, everything's been taken over by the Walking Dead version of what a zombie is. What kind of zombie are we looking at here?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but yes, it does have something in common with a lot of zombies we've seen before, in that they don't go after their own kind, but they can smell human blood. But there's some, what they get the suspense for more than the actual attacks necessarily, are trying to sort of evade the clutches of the zombies, and they use this young girl, these humans, to walk through them and find a path. So there's all these terribly still zombies and they're creeping past them. So it's more about the suspense than the action, which I prefer personally.
So this is the feature film debut for the director here, Colm McCarthy. He's worked on series like Peaky Blinders in the past, but what are your thoughts on him on the big screen? Considering this is his debut, is it a striking debut?
I believe he did a supernatural thriller with James Nesbitt called Outcast, but he is much better known for TV. That's absolutely true. And I think he does bring a little bit of that sort of Peaky Blinders sensibility, small screen aspect to the big screen. But that's no bad thing, because you know what? This isn't a film that is too long. It knows when to stop, which is actually quite rare for these kind of films. It's very rare that you see a horror that winds things up nice and sort of neatly towards the end, leaves us wanting a little bit more, hungry for more, if you like.
Wow, that is something that is quite rare. I have to agree. Nothing irritates me more than a film that outstays its welcome. Now, just quickly on this, because you did mention the children in the film. Children can so often be annoying in the cinema. How do they fare here?
Well, the key girl is a girl called Sania Nauna, and she is a terrific young actress, British actress, a real find. She brings that heart. We heard her doing the narration just now, but she has a wonderful relationship with her teacher, played by Gemma Arterton, who is a human. And there is a really touching sort of mother-daughter relationship brewing through this. And I would say she's far from annoying. The only thing that puzzled me was her accent. We weren't quite sure how she acquired a northern accent in the process of this film. But I liked her. She's a star in the making, and it's a film with a difference.
Well, look at that. Becoming a zombie can even give you an accent. Who knew? The Girl with All the Gifts is out now in the United Kingdom and Ireland and will roll out into European cinemas over the next month. It's being shown at the Helsinki and Vancouver International Film Festivals this year as well. Well, let's move on to our final film for today, which is The Magnificent Seven. In this remake of the 1960 classic, we join the residents of Rose Creek as they employ protection from seven outlaws against the control of an industrialist called Bartholomew Bogue. Let's hear a clip.
That man murdered my husband.
I want something. I take it.
He will take everything we have.
So you seek revenge?
I seek righteousness. But I'll take revenge.
I need more than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
You know how to shoot that thing?
I'm good.
Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, and Ethan Hawke amongst the voices you heard in that clip there in The Magnificent Seven. Anna, Who knew the Western would be in for a comeback? It's been a while since Westerns were dominating cinemas, but it seems for a couple of years now we've had them creeping back into the mainstream.
It's true. I mean, I was sort of refreshed to see this in a summer of superhero blockbusters, at least to see the good old-fashioned Western coming back. And this is old-fashioned in many ways. Of course, a lot of people are familiar with the 1960 original, or indeed before that, the Seven Samurai. But this kind of Western spin on that classic tale doesn't bring particularly anything new. But if you're after popcorn blockbuster entertainment, albeit too long, this one in its running time, and this kind of delivers.
So tell me a little about what's going on here, though, because, of course, it is a remake of a very well-known classic, and one would assume that they've stuck very much to that film, but given it a bit of an update with some contemporary star power.
Yeah, I'd say the most contemporary thing about it is more politically correct. I mean, you have much more ethnic diversity among the Magnificent Seven and also amongst the people that they save. It's a kind of more interesting film in that respect. It's interesting that Antoine Foucault actually does say that in the Wild West, it probably was much more ethnically diverse than we're used to seeing portrayed in this sort of whitewashing big screen versions of old. So I think that's refreshing. And there's probably a little bit of more spiky role for a woman here, Hayley Bennett. She plays a sort of damsel in distress, but who can fight for herself as well.
Well, I tell you what, on this week's edition of The Cinema Show, we just happen to be talking about another Western, Johnny Guitar, starring Joan Crawford, another very, very, very spiky Western star. But getting back to this one, so the 1960 version starred Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson. This new version, however, the man behind the screenplay is Nick Pizzolatto. Now, people will probably remember that name as the man behind True Detective, the HBO television series, which had a huge following and then quickly fell off a cliff. What are your thoughts on the way he's treated this film, though? Because, I mean, True Detective kind of felt like a bit of a very dark and brooding Western in some ways anyway, even though it wasn't, of course, not technically a Western at all. Did you feel his presence in this film?
Maybe a little. I mean, I'd say because it's a 12A certificate, perhaps he doesn't go as far as he'd like to. And, you know, it edges towards the dark side. It hints at the dark past of the characters, but it never really is able to fully go there. What I like about this film, which is what I liked about Suicide Squad, and then it sort of does a great setup. You meet all the guys, they're all brought together. Okay, right, they're on the rampage together. And then what? You know, there's a bit of a letdown. So you have a great hour set up. You're like, okay, this is going to be fantastic. And then it just trickles along for a bit. And then, of course, you've got the explosive finale. So, yeah, big baggy middle section, I'm afraid.
So that clip we heard obviously was taken from the trailer, and sometimes with trailers it's a little bit hard to know what kind of feeling the film is going to have. Trailers have this annoying habit of putting these boom, boom, boom noises all the way through, then you just think, shh, be quiet, I just want to be introduced to the characters. How does the film feel? Because, I mean, just going by that clip, it feels like an action movie.
It is like an action movie for the first act, I would say, and it's quite heavily soundtracked and it's quite busy, and there's obviously a lot of gunslinging and horses and riding and a few jokes. Chris Pratt, you know, is the man they wheel in to make the jokes, and he's relatively amusing. I've seen him funnier, but, you know, he's quite funny. So, yeah, it's kind of like a comedy light Western with some bursts of action, which then tries to go into kind of characterful training sequence, but which is really quite dull because the script just isn't up to it, and then an explosive finale.
Well, that is The Magnificent Seven, rolling out in cinemas all around the world right now. And that indeed brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Anna Smith. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday for a roundup of the art world with Jane Morris. But for now, thanks for listening, and goodbye.